Bring me sunshine in your smile. Hope you had a good Christmas and a good New Year. Obviously, today's game apart. Anyway, enough of me. Thanks for taking the time to download and listen to our podcast from CelticUnderground.net. We are now in our 16th year of podcasting, the world's longest running football fans podcast, as we say ad nauseam. So straight after the game, I think it was 10 minutes after the final whistle, maybe 15, I had to make a cup of tea and my dad phoned me. Spoke to Anthony Murray. So this is me and Anthony Murray.
As warm as the sun from up above, bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.
So this is immediately post-game. I am joined now by Anthony Murray. How you doing, Anthony?
Happy New Year.
Sorry, Happy New Year.
Everyone. Even if it's not true, let's just commit to the idea.
What's Christmas New Year like in Bratislava?
They think it's a big deal. I think it's St. Sylvester's Day is what we would call Hogmanay, I guess. Uh-huh. And they genuinely believe that the celebration in Bratislava is the biggest thing in the world. And it's like, the irony is that the Scots think that as well. They think Edinburgh's the, and maybe every capital city on the planet just thinks that. It's the place to be. But yeah, they... You know, on any other given year, they would commit to it. A lot of fireworks and stuff. They were banned this year, but various rascals were blasting them out anyway.
One of the things I discovered at Christmas time, I'd forgotten how much I like Maltesers. My 10-year-old seemed to get a lot of Maltesers at Christmas, and you know, obviously he needs to share. He needs to learn to share because he's an only child. He needs to learn how to share. So I'm helping him learn how to share. And I'm having a lot of these Maltesers.
Maltesers are one of the few sort of, you know, the chocolates you'd be used to seeing in a British corner shop. They're one of the few things you can get in Austria. So I literally cycle to Austria and load up on Maltesers because I didn't realise how good they were. But oh, the Iron Brew Maltesers combo is one to be sung about. That's where we are these days. That's why I've closed 2020 a record heavyweight. I literally qualify as a heavyweight boxer now, so that's good news.
Yeah, I think I'm just moving from the light heavyweight division into the cruiserweight division this festive period. Since we're talking about sweets, there's a very 90s retro feel to today. It was like watching a Tommy Burns, Walter Smith game. We completely dominate, get to halftime, and you're thinking, all we need is a goal because we are by a million miles a better team. And then some stupid thing happens in the game and game over.
And also I'd add to that, as the guy that is not a fan of conspiracy theories and often tuts off mic when I hear other people on this podcast going down that path, even I am sucked in at this point. And it's really just the Morales decision early on. You know, it's the classic, why is he, it's a VAR yellow card every day of the week when he scrapes that the studs down Frimpong's ankle. It's just a nasty, nasty little potentially dangerous challenge. And old fat Morales gets away with it. And it just shapes the narrative that we are now paranoid. And I think Madden did break up the game in the middle at a point where we were dominating. But ultimately, I think we've only got ourselves to blame. But that was the one that was the, oh, here's how it's going to be. Yeah, you know, it's just a horrible tackle. And the ref turns a blind eye to it, which is what happened in the 90s.
Yeah, and okay, so Madden's a wee bit further away. That might be his defence. He's not Willie Collum, who doesn't know where the ball's going to go and runs next to it all the time. But it's the camera angle down from the touchline behind the Rangers goal that's facing back up, when you can see that the fourth official is clear as day watching that challenge. You can actually see his eyes following Morelos through the challenge. Now, they're all mic'd up these days. The fourth official does play a part in decision-making these days. Easiest thing in the world is for the fourth official to say, that's a yellow all day long. He's raked his studs down Frimpong's leg. and he doesn't. And I'm like you. I go for more the cock-up over the conspiracy theory principle. But that's when I then get into the, you know, we all, every human on the planet has got innate biases. They've got subconscious bias that, you know, you can't, I've mentioned in the podcast before, there's a, is it Beyond the Rules or something? What's it called? It's a podcast, part of the...
Michael Lewis.
Michael Lewis. And he talks about the analysis they did in basketball in America on referees and the unconscious bias that they found against black players and the principle that I have gone for years on about sympathy refereeing happens. That when a team's getting heavily beaten by a big team, when a wee team's getting heavily beaten by or one of the better teams is heavily beating one of the lesser teams in basketball, the lesser team starts to get decisions or they don't get things against them that they would do earlier in the game. It's sympathy refereeing happens. But, you know, well, these things don't happen in Scotland. So I don't believe necessarily that they all get together and decide on it, but I do believe in... You and I see... If we're watching an innocuous Celtic Motherwell game amongst Motherwell fans, we would see something... Motherwell fans would suddenly go mental around us, and we wouldn't even know what they were going mental about. Because their bias takes them one way and ours takes us the other way. It's human nature. Anyway, on to the game. What did you think of the team, first up?
I was pleased with the team. I had no complaints. We went with the sensible decision. You know, the winning team, the team that had been playing well. So I was pleased with that. And then ultimately, you know, 45 minutes in, you're feeling justified, you know, in that optimism. I thought McGregor for the first 25 minutes, maybe 30 minutes, was absolutely brilliant. Mm-hmm. You know, I really thought, you know, he took it like a captain. He took responsibility. He was getting little tackles in, little toes in. You know, we just had them crammed in at the edge of their box, didn't we? Certainly in their half. And I thought they all played well for much of it. I thought Soro was doing well, and then he got the. What I would say was a rare. It was the booking for, you know, added up fouls, but it was also added up fouls that weren't actually fouls. You know, it's coming back to the referee. It's like he wasn't catching people. He wasn't fouling people. It was just lots and lots of little non decisions that were getting put against him. But I thought Soro was doing well. I thought Beaton and Ayer at that point looked good. You know, they looked like good centre mids that are playing at the back, you know, and we were so dominant that, you know, we looked class. But I mean, this takes us back to the 90s, you know, where when we thought Brian O'Neill was a good libero for a bit until we realised he's not, you know. Yeah. So I was really happy. I think one thing that struck me, I don't know if it was early in the second half or maybe late in the first, was that, all right, Frimpong isn't doing well, they're letting him do that. Do you know what I mean? That's a tactic. They realise this kid's got no final ball. Do you know what I mean? He's really not. It's not like Agat tearing down the wing and, you know, when he gets in that danger zone, even Agat had a poor final ball. But, you know, you watch a series of Celtic goals from the turn of the century, Agat sets up a lot of them. You realise Frimpong's not, you know, statistically he is not going to set up enough goals. Because he has no final ball. There was one really bad one where it was dished over to him like quite high, but he took a lovely touch and then just did nothing with it. Mm-hmm. And then you see the equivalent of, you know, Barisic gets a half an inch down the left and he puts in a dangerous pass. And you realise the importance of the ability to kick a ball for a fullback. It's so important. And Frimpong can't do it. And you realise, all right, that he's not burning Barisic. Rangers are letting him get into danger zones because they're probably pretty safe in the knowledge he ain't going to hurt them.
And I noticed it was towards the end of the first half that I noticed they were doubling up, but they were not doubling up right on top of him. They were doubling up, standing off of him and just making sure he didn't have a ball cutting back inside to Christie or whoever. Yeah. And so then he would go down to the byline. Or in that direction. And then, as you say, he doesn't have a final ball, unfortunately. And, but you're right, I thought, again, gets back to the point earlier in the season, and the fans' criticism of playing a past it Brown too much. For me, Sorrow, it's no coincidence that McGregor suddenly turned back into Callum McGregor.
Yeah.
Because he's no longer covering for an aged guy who can't make it about the pitch so much. It's not Scott Brown's fault. A guy said, I don't know if you were copied in the tweet, a guy, can't believe you guys had such a go at Brown in the last podcast. I don't think we did have a go at Brown. We kept saying it's not Brown's fault.
Yeah.
It's not his fault. He keeps getting played when he's 35 and a half. And his whole style of playing, his career has been about running around. And with the greatest will in the world, a 35 and a half year old, can he run around so much? For me, I sent a text to some people at half time saying that the thing that really struck out to me was how much we were pressing them high up the pitch. That actually, when their centre halves had the ball, it was almost like we went to a 4-3-3 with Edward left, Griffiths right, and Tumble through the middle.
Yeah.
To press them in the three. And we were also running at them with the ball. Those were the two things that really struck me, was how much we pressed and how much we ran at them with the ball. And they were nothing. It was the first half was as one-sided as the first half at Celtic Park in October was one-sided the other way around. So what were your thoughts at half-time?
I'd make one observation. I'd say about the 35th minute, I saw Griffiths doing the sort of exhale, I'm knackered sort of thing. I don't know, maybe I'm just reading too much into a body gesture. But I did, you know, I did creep in that, all right, that's, why is he doing that? You know, why is he not super fit? I get him and Edward are doing a lot of hard work. They are pressing well. And Griffiths had that brilliant chance, which we should mention, you know, where he shapes it into the top corner as well as he could. And McGregor makes a genuinely world-class save. I hate McGregor. I hate making any excuse to say anything positive about the guy. But that was an outstanding save that, you know, any goalkeeper would have been chuffed with. And it's as soon as you see it, it's one of those saves, going back to the 90s, it's one of those saves that you just get a sense this is going to make a difference, isn't it? You know, had that gone in the top corner, this game pans out completely differently. It's also something about, again, a thing we've discussed, the technique of kicking a ball. I think Christie had so many chances. Is he trying to pick out the top corner, or is he trying to hit the target? Because surely the plan should be hit the target, you know, rather than limiting your space to, you know, a square foot in the top corner where you end up blasting it into the Clyde. You know, that happened on several occasions. So, I mean, that's obviously a thing that other people have discussed. But yeah, Christie just trying to kick the ball too hard. Because you saw with Griffiths, he maybe took a bit of juice off it, but he nearly picked out the top corner. So I don't know what the perfect formula is. Do you kick it hard and aim for the middle? Play for a deflection, play for a keeper mistake, play for it by chance going in the top corner? Or do you try and pick out a corner? I don't know, but neither worked for us today.
Well, actually, you mentioned, you know, and they were mentioning Andy Gorham on Sky's coverage and comparing McGregor with Andy Gorham. And one of the things that bugged me in the Tommy Burns era about the hailing of Andy Gorham as the greatest keeper ever, he parried the ball out a lot. Alan McGregor parries the ball out a lot. So for me, if you've got a keeper who parries shots out a lot, you make sure you just get it on target.
Yeah.
And you have guys following up. If you say to your midfielders, you know, again, it was the thing that used to bug me about Andy Gorham. He never came off his line. So you see people put crosses in round about the edge of the six-yard box. He'll not come off his line, and their centre-halves are running back. We'll get corner kicks all day long. And for some reason, we didn't. Alan McGregor parries the ball out. So midfield, just get it on target. Edward and Griffiths, you're falling up all the time. Make sure you're onside when the shot's taken and follow this up, because he parries these out. He's not... My point about him parrying it out, he's not like Fraser Foster, where he parries it further than I can kick it.
Yeah.
He parries it dead centre of the goals. Again, he's not like a top keeper who parries it round the corner over. He parries it out in the sort of, if you drew a semicircle from the edge of the 6-yard box round to the penalty spot, that's the zone he parries it into. So just make sure it's on target. Granted, the Griffiths one was different, but that's a slightly different principle. I'm just talking about get it in, take shots, don't put them in the... If they're landing in the top tier of the stand really behind bad. The goal. You try one, it's not worked. I'll try it differently. Don't keep doing the same thing. But I thought we were excellent first half. So then on to, and in fact, I always think if the opposition manager makes a substitution inside the first 55 minutes, you've won the setup, you've won the system part of the competition, because you're making them have to make changes to react to you, and they made halftime change. So in the second half, what do you make of that?
At that point, you're the difference between this solid performance and making something of it is, right, your front two need to do something. And at that point, I think Griffiths fell out of the game. Edward, there's only so many times I can make excuses for a performance like that. You know, that you're kind of... I think a mate of mine sent a message saying, you know, Edward's been rotten. And I was like, yeah, but it's the Edward performance. He only needs one chance. You know, he only needs to get that yard once and he can do something magical. But as the game went on, you just didn't look like that bit of magic was going to happen. And it was a low percentage match by him where he kept turning into trouble, making loose passes, ball wasn't sticking. And you just like, you know, other great Celtic strikers never had games like this, you know? You know, they just held on to the ball, or they fed the fullbacks, or what, you know, they just didn't have games where you were making excuses for them. So at that point, when you're needing those two to step up and make us winners, it's not happening. And then inevitably Rangers, you know, counter and come back into the game. I mean, I'm still relatively confident we're on top of the game when disaster strikes.
Do you know, who did we play last? Dundee United?
Yeah.
In the Dundee United game, I said to a couple of mates that I thought Rogic and Elianusi are fantastic substitutes to bring on. We're half an hour to go, between half an hour and 25 minutes to go in a game when the opposition are starting to tire a wee bit and we want to slightly loosen up our rigid diamond system that we've been playing with. They're great subs to come on. And just before, I mean, I might have even still been sending the text of saying he needs to make the change now or get Elianusi on, because you could just see one or two players tiring him. Yeah. And for me, the big error this season, in particular in Europe, for Neil Lennon, has been he spotted the players tiring 5 minutes too late. He spotted El Hamed tiring after Ferencvaros scored. He spotted Ncham tiring in, was it Milan or Lille? When we were, you know, he spotted players tiring just 2 or 3 minutes too late. And I thought, right, this is the time. Get Elianusi on. I was in mid-text. And Beaton pulls Morelos down. So
first instinct was if that exact passage of play happens, but the shirts are reversed, the Rangers player's not getting sent off for that. I'm not saying it's not a red card, I'm just saying a Rangers player isn't getting sent off for that. The Celtic player is. The Rangers player isn't. So as soon as the red card's out, it's like, well, this has been a, you know, a mountain, and it was bigger than a mountain, you know? One of those super volcanoes that are in Mars or something. And, I only learned about them yesterday, so they're fresh on my mind. but yeah, just as soon as he's off, you're like, ah, right, you know, 10 men, we were doing all right. But, you know, not only are we surrendering a chance because they're good at hitting free kicks into the box, but, you know, we managed to not let in a goal immediately. But then there was the parallels. You just think, what would Rodgers do here? You know, what's the substitution that Rodgers would do here that wins this game? And it isn't Duffy coming on. I mean, he's poor lad's going to go down as a Raphael Scheidt, Dewey disaster. Just an absolutely appalling signing. I don't know how good or bad he was for Brighton, but oh, what a terrible signing. And he's the man we're turning to in a moment of disaster. So I feel sorry for Beaton because I was towards the end of my football career, I was a frustrated centre mid that was getting forced to play centre half, you know? And I think the last 4 years of his Celtic career has been that. So I feel sorry for him, but hell, he's been well paid. And I guess that's the end of Beaton's Celtic career. And I think people are very angry with him. I think, again, I'm trying to make excuses for someone I like, but there's probably no coming back from that. And yeah, Beaton can be added to the long list of players that I would happily never see play for Celtic again.
The league wasn't lost when Beaton pulled the guy down.
Yeah.
The league was lost in September, October, November.
Yeah.
So, let's, you know, I know you have a difference of opinion to me, but it's a bit like the blaming of Samaras for losing the league when he missed a penalty. Samaras missing a penalty does not lose us the league.
But it did.
No. you lose the league in over a number of games. You don't lose the league on one player's decision making. Anyway, so Beaton's decision on its own doesn't lose us the league. But it just turned that game into a retro 1990s game. That's what this thing did. It gives the referee a decision to make on whether it's a red or a yellow. If he wants an easy life, it's far enough away from goal that he can get away with only giving it as a yellow.
Yeah.
But he gives the red. Do you think he needed to, you know, sometimes if he doesn't pull the guy down, he's through on goal. Do you think he needed to do that?
Like I say, you were saying he was quite far away. Morelos is not a whippet by any means. You know, there was a tight angle, so he didn't need to do it. One thing I would say is that at that point, I think it was the 55th minute, that the thought entered my mind that Rangers are happy with a 0-0 here. You know, just the body language, the movement, you know, no fans in the stadium, you know, that sort of training game element of it. That was the first time I thought, yeah, Rangers are happy to just grind out a 0-0 here. They've got no real ambition to win this. And it was going to take, you know, a moment of daftness from ourselves to set them up to go and take it. So, yeah, he didn't need to pull him down. Like I say, having played a bit of football, you know, I've been in that position a million times. I never pulled down a guy and got a red card. You know, you bet on yourself to try and make it back, you know. There was that time when Ayer had a brilliant one where he was skinned by Kent and he just hit the accelerator over, you know, 20 metres, 30 metres and just, you know, walked away with the ball. That was, at that moment, we were quite confident that we were doing well. But I guess Morelos got on the other side of him at that point and Beaton did the stupid thing, grabbed him and down he came. But even then, he's probably thinking, I can pull him down and I'll get a yellow card.
Do you think this is where the converting I mean, I'm not so much of an issue with Ayer playing centre-half, because Ayer's now played centre-half for four years, and you know, he's, what, 22? So Ayer, as a professional footballer, has played centre-half pretty much. Although Beaton has been a centre-half for 75% of the last 4 years as well, but he's played a large chunk of his professional career. Do you think the principle of the change of mindset of being a defender has a part in making the decision, the split decision to make the foul? And what I mean is, if you're a midfielder and the guy turns you and gets past you, you know there's someone behind you.
Yeah.
So for a start, you can make the foul if that's the way you are, because there's someone behind you. Or you cannot make the foul and there's another line of guys who've got a chance. So I'm wondering whether either the ex-midfielder in him think it's automatic to make the foul because it won't be a red, it will be a yellow. Or the ex-midfielder in him thinks, shit, I'm playing as a centre-half, this guy's past me, I better pull him down because he's through. I'm just wondering if there's some element or whether it's just a bad decision.
It's blind panic, isn't it? It is just, you know, I mean, there is no right decision. You know, maybe he lets him go and he goes through one-on-one and buries it, you know. So, I mean, we know it's Morelos. We can laugh and say, oh, you would have missed anyway, you know. Maybe that's true. But ultimately, you know, it's going to go down as one of those moments that, you know, really turns a game that we lose. You know, like when Yama gets sent off at Ibrox once, or Stefan Mahe gets sent off at Ibrox once. You know, these...
It was very similar to where Simonovic's red elbow.
That's unique in that we got away with it. Is that not... That's the 3-2, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, that one, Rodgers, you know, rolls the dice and we come away laughing and winning.
Well, because this is my point, when you said what substitutions would Brendan have made. Brendan won every single game. I can't remember in Europe, but domestically, every game that we went to 10 men, Brendan won.
Yeah.
Brendan made right decisions. And Lennon then, my dad just phoned me, who's not... My dad can't be bothered with, generally can't be bothered with post-match chat. Yeah. A football match lasts 90 minutes, that's it. Can't be bothered with all the analytics and analysing and systems and all that. But one of my bugbears all season has been saying that Lennon has made substitutions like I make substitutions in Football Manager. You just stick guys on, hope that something changes. My dad phoned me up just before we started this to say... And then what did Lennon... Why was Lennon doing what he did with the substitutions? The team was playing well. The midfield was playing well. And he suddenly just starts randomly throwing people onto the pitch. Now, that's my dad, who's not, you know, the 90-minute cynic guys or Duco James or Celtic by Numbers or Tic Tac Talk. He's not an analyst analysing. He's just sitting watching thinking he's just randomly throwing people on the pitch. I get the thought process.
Yeah.
We need to have another centre-half on the park. So that's why he takes off Griffiths and puts on Duffy. I'm not saying it was the right. I'm just saying I understand the thought process on that one. I didn't understand the thought process on most of the other substitutions.
Yeah. Yeah, it was desperation by everyone involved. You know, I guess the Soro was on a yellow card. So, in the context, you don't want to go down to nine men.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes perfect sense. And Brown should have the legs to, you know, survive 40 minutes or 30 minutes or whatever it was. I don't think Christie was doing much in that, you know, I think he probably deserves to be hooked. Were Turnbull's legs going, maybe? I don't know. I didn't see a lot of evidence of it. But, yeah, it was just total random. Him, fresh legs. Griffiths got hooked, obviously, at first. But that's the one, isn't it? That's the decision Rodgers made. Do I go one up top? No. I throw on Edouard or Dembele or whatever it was
Rodgers always, when we went to 10, when we went to 10 men, Rodgers, I mean, granted, we were changing from 4-2, from, you know, we were at 1-up, 4-2-3-1, but Rodgers always went 4-3-2 and went to 2 up front to actually then make the opposite, instead of the opposite, giving the opposition the ball and saying, right, we're now going to be backs to the wall and hope that we score a breakaway. Rodgers then said, we're going to make you think about what we're doing.
Yeah.
We're sticking to it.
And it's obviously been wise after the event. And without Beaton, there was a serious issue with size, you know, because, you know, Laxalt ain't big, Frimpong ain't big. So in that situation, you were down to just, you know, basically just iron the keeper with any size whatsoever. So, you know, you could almost, if you were trying to justify why you put Duffy on, that might be it. But, yeah, the disasters that we put ourselves in that position where we're relying on the big man to, you know, hoof balls into the box and be our best option for a goal.
But again, that's, I mean, maybe I'm being overly critical in this, but for me, again, that's where I think an elite coach of Brendan Rodgers' stature, I think he's got, what happens if we are winning and get a centre-half sent off? What happens if we're winning and we get a midfielder and one of these midfielders goes off? What happens if we're winning? What happens if we're drawing and one of these things happen? And what happens if we're losing one of these things? What do I do to the system in those, all of those sets of scenarios? So three scenarios when you're winning, three scenarios when you're drawing, and three scenarios when you're losing. And therefore, it's fairly straightforward. I mean, maybe he did, and maybe the system is, right, okay, well, we're going to go 4-4-1. It just didn't seem that way.
It asks an awful lot of a guy who's already not doing much. You know, when he two up top and Edouard's doing hee-haw, all right, now you're up there on your own. And, it, you know, it's a collective responsibility. The ball's getting, you know, fired into him, need to be better, need to be clever. And there was the odd little bit of sort of ticky-tacky stuff on the edge of the box or on the left. I thought McGregor was trying to do his best. Laxalt was involved in some nice stuff, but ultimately, you know, he's a bit like a mirror image of Frimpong in that there's no final ball there.
You know, he's more of a defender, I think. You know, I mean, only because Eddie Pearson is Greg Taylor thinks his love child in a WhatsApp group that I'm in. And so I've been looking at the stats, and Laxalt is a really good defender. And I looked at his, on one of the websites, I looked at his heat map for the Dundee United game, and he didn't really go two-thirds of the way up the pitch, is about as far as he went. He spent most of the game just inside our half to about 20 yards from their goal. That's where he spent most of it. I suppose Lennon's point would be, at the send it off, it's still 0-0. And whilst we don't want to lose, we want to win the game, a draw was not an utter disaster.
I think a draw was game
no,
over.
No, I agree. Know. And so I'm just wondering if at that point, instead of taking Griffiths off at that point, he could have taken Sorrow off because he was on the booking.
Yeah.
Just taking away the defensive midfielder. And if he wanted to put another centre-half on, put Duffy on, take Sorrow off at that point and go do the Brendan Rodgers thing of go 4-3-2.
Yeah.
And play the midfield diamond without the bottom point and just try from there.
I mean, any other options could have existed, but the reality is, you know, it's sort of limited coach. He was a limited coach 18 months ago. He was a limited coach 3 months ago, and he'll be a limited coach tomorrow morning. And what are we, 19 points behind with games in hand?
Three games in hand. So if we win our three games in hand, I mean, so we're on the 2nd of December, and it's completely out with our hands to win the league. 2nd of January, and it's out with our hands to win the league. Because if we win every game between now and the end of the season, including beating Rangers twice, we don't have enough points to win the league. We need them to drop points. more points than we drop.
Yeah. No, but like we say, that was never going to happen, you know, going back as far as, I don't know, October. So, yeah, time to... Gives us plenty of time to plan for next season.
Well, I'm going to get on to next season and what you would do after this game, but I'll need to finish the game. Their goal?
There's the tragedy, isn't it? I thought McGregor was doing well, having a nice game, and it's the poxiest of own goals.
Yeah.
But then it brings us back to our conversation we've had a million times where I've no sympathy for a team that lets in back post corners. You know, it's Sunday league. I'd be the guy in the post, heading that way. But, you know, so easy. And I know there's a million keeper. Doesn't he want a guy in the post? Oh, shit. I'd rather just see it headed off the line. And it's so obvious that that can be avoided. As poxy as it was with coming off McGregor's arm, basically. Some days it's not for you, and it just makes me sad that I think McGregor, I hope McGregor stays at Celtic forever, but he'd be utterly entitled to say, right, I'm just going to go and get some Premier League money. You know, I've done my bit, you know, I've earned my move, and he would go with my blessing, but
£80,000 a week.
Yeah, so I saw Stuart Armstrong signed a new deal at Southampton yesterday.
Yeah,
there was a YouTube video celebrating it, and you can only wonder what his wage has gone up to.
Yeah,
having done well, so
and he's 60% of the player, 70% of the player. Callum McGregor is.
Yeah, McGregor's a brilliant player. There was moments in the middle of that game today where that's what I was thinking. McGregor's the best Scottish player of his generation, comfortably. You know, you keep your McGinn, keep your. The boy at United, you know, there's lots of them that are good players, but none of them are better than Cal McGregor. We've been lucky to have him perhaps for so long. So it's just a bit sad that, you know, he's the one that, you know, it's his name on the score sheet, I guess, today. Just a poxy goal. It was after, you can't really blame the centre halves. It just was what it was, wasn't it? But no, a lousy goal, but all Rangers' best goals usually are, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just one of these ones. Aribo gets a header, two big centre-halves are dealing with their two big guys who are a threat at corner kick. So that's, you know, like most teams, it's a combination of man marking and a wee bit of zonal marking. And our men are marking their danger men. Guy at front post gets a bit of a flick on, hits off somebody's arm, shoulder, and into the back of the net. Thereafter, we never really looked like getting back into the game.
There was the one, El Yunus had a nice volley from distance, but that's a Hail Mary, that. Again, that's part of this malaise, isn't it? That you've got a player who, you know, basically on Premier League wages, potentially a Premier League talent, certainly a Europa League talent, and he's not even starting for us, and we are not very good. You know, it's how, you know, just, you know, I wonder what a good coach would do with a player like that. And again, players have to take responsibility for their performances. But yeah,
he's our top scorer this season, and we know Edward. I mean, I was looking at the stats actually. You can see why Edwards are far well, we get far more money than Morelos, because when Edwards not scoring goals, pass completion rate, I mean, we're all season Celtic fans have been saying, oh, you know, Eddie's not playing well.
Yeah.
And he's not been, but his pass completion rate, his assists, his play makes him one of the best players. If you look at the stats, he's still one of the best players in the league.
Yeah.
Morelos is way down. If he doesn't score goals, he's nowhere. And you look at Edward, you look at Elian Nussi, you know there's a player there. You just look at the team and you think, you've got, surely there's got to be a way that when you can get those players on the park and those players win games. So that then when you're 19 points behind Rangers at January, that's the level of difference that managerial changes have to take place. So at clubs of our stature. So would you make a change now, or would you not bother now?
I think right now, keeping him just makes him a lightning rod for anger. You know, obviously nobody's angrier than me. I was way ahead of the curve on that anger. talk about early responder or whatever, early adopter. So I'm post anger. You know, it's just pure. I'm
well away from the anger. You know, you and I's anger was back in August.
Yeah.
Well, May 2019 actually was when my
At that point, it's a lightning rod. So you just put him on gardening leave and bring in some other guys to learn their job. You know, if Kennedy and McManus or Darren O'Day or whoever guys that are already getting paid want to learn how to be a football manager, now's your chance. Unless, you know, we roll out some ringer tomorrow, which isn't going to happen. Ideally, that would be it, wouldn't it? It'd be put in place a guy who is going to be the guy next season. Put him in place now. I can't imagine we're going to spend a penny in January, and I don't really want us to, unless it would be in the hands of a guy that is building for next year. If there was some sort of project signings that were legit, you know, good, like a Ki-Sun Yong, you know, the equivalent, the young good guy that we bring in January who's going to kick on and be a really good footballer for Celtic.
We signed two guys at the beginning of December. I didn't know the transfer window. There's two guys. I mean, they patently haven't been at the club because you'd have played them all the time. Sorrow and Turnbull. You know, obviously, you know, like that type of thing, you mean? Young guys that if we'd have had them at the club earlier, we wouldn't be 19 points behind. That type of thing.
Absolutely, definitely. So he, you know, you build your team around the guys that are going to be here next year. So in that sense, you, if there's any termination of Duffy's contract, you press that button now. Like, you know, before the sun goes down. The sun is still up there, isn't it? I can see it through your window.
It's
already dark here. So yeah, before the sun goes down in Scotland, Celtic Park time, Duffy, I see people are already offering to drive him to the airport or all the way to Brighton. God knows with COVID restrictions if you'd get away with that, but I'm sure people would be willing to make the sacrifice.
The police would stop. I'm taking Duffy home. Oh, on you go.
On you go. God bless him. Yeah, we don't need to see Duffy ever again. Don't really need that. Laxalt's not that much better than Taylor to the point that keep Laxalt, send Laxalt back to Milan. Don't need him. If we can get a nickel for Ayer, take it. We're not going to get any more in the summer than we would in January. If Christie doesn't want to be there, sell him. He can't do it against the Rangers. Take any money we'll get for him. Edward, obviously you want to keep hold on to him, but if we're going to get maximum money in January versus holding on for the summer and then he's not going to play, sell him. A couple of others that could go, but really it would just be about getting minutes into the legs of guys that might be Celtic's future.
The only problem with that is we've got zero centre-halves under that system because Julian's out for 3 to 4 months. So basically Julian's out for the rest of the season. So we couldn't, if that's the only thing about Duffy going, and obviously Beaton has got a red card, so he's out for the next game at least. So we could no centre-halves.
Well, you just, you know, as long as they're still getting paid for the club. Nobody's, well, El Hamid might be away, you know, if West internet rumours are to be believed that he's not settled and all that. But
to repeat my comments, who'd have thought a late 20s Israeli player who cost £1 million would be average?
What a twist. You make Brown and Mascherano for the last 6 months of his Celtic career and hope that he wins a Scottish Cup, you know, playing sweeper. Stranger things have happened. You play Walsh or whoever else plays for Celtic's under-21s at centre-half. you just get legs into the players we've got. If there's anyone that you could sign them. If you think, you know, they are long term projects and our so called scouts are actually planning for this. But yeah, there's so much money to be saved in just I like El Yunusi, but if El Yunusi is only there to minimise Mikey Johnson's playing time between now and July, get the fuck. he doesn't need to be there. We can spend that money better elsewhere. That's the situation. It's just about building a new Celtic team because this one's run out of gas.
And here's the problem you mentioned of scouts. Gets back to my first ever time I met with Peter Lawwell. 7 years ago, something like that. And I was critical of the fact that we had a self-declared player trading model without any scouting network. We had one guy, and it was Park. And I remember saying, what happens if that one guy... Now, the circumstances were slightly different, but the principle actually is what happened. What happens if that one guy gets poached by somebody else and we bring somebody else in who's not as good as that guy? We need to have a network. We should have 4 or 5 scouts in South America, 2 or 3 scouts. I know I keep banging on about it, but it does my fucking box in. 2 or 3 guys, boots on the ground that we pay their wages, not a guy who knows a guy. Actually, people who live there, we pay their wages. They are Celtic employees. They have a Celtic T-shirt. They go to bed in Celtic pyjamas. Their expenses account is paid for by Celtic. Their hotel accommodation when they go to games is paid for by Celtic. They pick up the phone to Celtic Park and say, can you organise me tickets for the Slovan Bratislava home game next week? And Celtic Park organised for that guy to go. You know, that is what we should have across Europe and South America. I mean, how many people live in South America? 500 million? And we haven't signed a player from South America for 20 years. The rest of the bloody world does. And we keep being interested. You know, our latest guy that we're interested is a Preston North End centre-half. I mean, fuck off. Nothing. I don't know the guy from Adam. But I really don't. I'm going to take a gamble on this. In the same way that I took a gamble on El Hamed, I'm going to take a gamble. A 25-year-old playing for Preston North End is not going to get us to the last 16. A guy who's currently 25 playing for Preston North End is not going to get us to the last 16 in the Champions League. Am I fucking Einstein? You meet people and you have a conversation, you think, either I'm Einstein or you're an arsehole. And I don't think I'm Einstein.
I guess the logic behind that particular, I think it's Preston North End, he's centre mid.
He's a centre mid.
25-year-old. It's a Ledley signing, isn't it? It's a looking at that league and saying, right, who's the best? They've probably drawn up a list. Which players in the English Championship are on a Bosman that look all right? Because Joe Ledley wasn't a world phenomenon. He was a solid player who came up and did a solid, good job, did play at Champions League level, was never our best player, but was certainly a very reliable player. So that's the template. You know, let's do another Joe Ledley. And, you know, the boy came through Man United's academy, played all the way through England's youth setup. So he's clearly got some talent. He might be a good Celtic player, but he's not going to be a great Celtic player. I mean, ultimately, did we not just buy the 8 years younger version of that when we bought Luke O'Connell from Bolton? You know, it's just the same kind of template. Heaven forbid we give one of our own a chance, you know? If you're
at this point, I should have got St. Anthony on and he'd be seeing you and Henderson.
I'm all for, he'd be in my equation for the second half of the season if we're not.
Well, the only thing I would say, if you and Henderson or any of his relatives are listening, not that I think they are. You're 22 years of age. Get yourself to the gym. He should be bigger. He should be, I'm not talking height, upper body, he should be bigger than he is. It, you know. Get yourself in the gym. Build yourself up.
Well, that's, is that not all part of the sports science and the coaches? You know, should this not all be, I mean, famously, was it not Dr. Venglos told John Paul McBride, you know, hit the gym and beef up? And John mm-hmm. Paul McBride said, no, I'm going to go and be a park thistle footballer. God bless him, you know. Sure, he had a fine career in the Scottish lower leagues. But if it shouldn't even be a choice for Celtic youth players to not be doing these things, you know? They must be. Ewan Henderson must be in the gym. No?
Does he look like it?
I don't know.
He's me, I'd eat more mold, say, Jesus.
Did Iniesta need to hit the gym? You know, you can be good enough and smart enough. You don't need to be ripped or buff.
I bet you Iniesta was buff enough.
Yeah, pretty solid.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I just don't know. I actually think now, actually, I wanted the manager changed. Yeah. I didn't go down well, my comments, our comments in August, but the manager was not the right choice. He's for us. There was nothing on his... Nothing. I've met him, you know, nice guy. I really like him. Knows he's Celtic inside out. You know, you'd be amazed at how much he knows his Celtic history. And he does know his football. If you took the names off and had a CV came in when Brendan Rodgers left, and you were making a full-time appointment. I'm not talking about the part-time decision. I actually see the rationale about why Lennon came in when the day that Brendan left. But if you're looking at a full-time appointment, here's a guy, he has managed Champions League football, but not for 8-9 years. And since then, he was sacked at Bolton. I mean, there's understanding issues at Bolton. And then... had one okay season at Hibs. We had a last 16 Champions League team. He's not what we are looking for.
So at every point, yeah, there needs to be a review of what we're attracting to the club. You know, it's we're a Champions League club in all but the fact we've got photos of Billy McNeil holding the trophy and once beat Barcelona. You know, it's nobody's stupid enough to fall for this anymore. You know, particularly when there's money elsewhere to be made. You know, you could go and play for Fulham, live a very happy life in Fulham. You know, beautiful place, a lot of money.
Yeah, but my point is, in the last year when it was comparable, so in the 12 months prior to, and at the point Neil Lennon was appointed, right? We had the second highest revenue in European football outside the big five leagues. The second highest wage bill in European football outside the big five leagues. I just think if you have the right structure, you could get a really high quality, infinitely superior to Neil Lennon, quality coach would come to Celtic to give him, because he's going to get money to spend, relatively speaking.
Yeah.
Outside the big five leagues, we can pay him the £2 million a year wage bill that actually every, you know, apart from the top three or four or five teams in the Premiership and two teams in Spain and one team in Italy, we can pay him the wages he wants. And you accept the fact that that guy is going to do a Brendan Rodgers. He's going to come in for 2 to 3 seasons tops. And if he delivers what we expect him to deliver, he's off.
Yeah.
When Fulham come along, he's off. But because you've got the director of football who sets the strategy and the coaching culture, you're fine with that because you know he's going to be off. And you just bring in the next guy. And what you don't do, and you don't stuff your academy with players who came through the academy. You don't stuff your academy coaches with players who came through the academy and had an average career. You look at the Balkans and Central Europe where you are. You look at South America and you go, right, okay, why are they producing players that we are not? Let's hire their coach. Instead of just signing their players all the time, let's hire their coaches to make other players like that. And that's it. And the ideal opportunity for us to do that was February 2012. Because the only team who could possibly compete with us financially, domestically, had just gone. And you had the ability to reset everything.
You have to assume that going back to October, you know, the writing's been on the wall and it's been all hands to the pump with a fix. You know, surely the people in charge of the club aren't that incompetent.
Yep. Because they, right, this, I mean, they made it clear at the AGM, this is what they felt, right? They felt we've had a really bad run of luck this season. We've had six or seven players with positive COVID tests or had to self-isolate because of it. We've had, on top of that, we've had injuries to key players. So we've had Edward out with the COVID. We've had Beaton out with the COVID. We've had El Hamid out with the COVID. We've had, at the same time, Julian injured. At the same time, we had Christie having to self-isolate with the COVID. Was there other people? And then we had the Ballingolly incident. We had Nicola Sturgeon deciding to postpone two of our games, which then, that, you know, they talk about in cricket, scoreboard pressure. That then creates the problem of, you feel, all everybody talks about is how far behind you are when two of those games are still to be played. And Rangers have had none of that bad luck. That's the mentality, and that their bad luck will come. Plus, every January they fall apart anyway. So chuck in that. We win against them on January the 2nd, and we win our games in hand. There's only 4 points in it. Let's see, squeaky bum time, see if they have the bad run of luck. And they'll be sitting there looking at Man United second. If we'd have won today, they'd have been sitting looking at Man United second in the English Premiership, and Celtic, if we win our games in hand, only 4 points behind Rangers, and saying, see, this modern way of firing managers every 5 minutes doesn't work. There's two clubs who've stuck with managers where everybody said fire them, and they're back in the ballpark. That's how they would have seen it.
One of my favourite moments in football history as a total neutral with English affairs was when Man United had a lead in, was it 97, 98, I think it was, and Arsenal had like 12 points to make up or something like that. And I think Ferguson made the stupid comment of, you know, I'd rather have the points on the board. And then Arsene Wenger's Arsenal just went nuclear. It just win. And then Arsenal won the double. You know, it was just brilliant seeing a team get the wind in their sails and run away with a title, which was, you know, really exciting. But I mean, that was never going to happen.
That is in a league where I don't think the English Premiership is the greatest league in the world, as they like to say. But it is a league where teams outside regularly can take points off other teams. So the only team who's going to take points off Rangers is Celtic. There might be the odd game, but in a season, most of the time, it's, you know, as I remember saying straight after the October game, I couldn't, and through November, my issue was we needed to beat them three times, and I couldn't see us beating them three times. Now, granted, play today's game again, Beaton doesn't get sent off, we probably don't lose. And who knows? But the reality is, by having the dreadful September, October, November, we put ourselves in a position where we couldn't afford to not win this game.
Yeah.
I also, maybe again, a bit like you with the Griffiths comment, I don't know if I'm looking too much into it. I looked at our players when they scored, and I didn't think we were going to come back. I looked at our players when we went behind under Brendan Rodgers, and I did think they thought we were going to come back. I just they just didn't look like a team of players who thought they were going to go.
I think everyone has seen through the, you know, like the celebrations in the Dundee United game. Everyone's smiling, everyone patting each other on the back, but it's just, it's so obviously a mask. Either individuals involved or a collective that, you know, we're pretending this momentum's real, but who really believed it, honestly? I was pleased as punch to see Soros score that wonder goal the other day. But, you know, it's not something we can rely on. You know, Soros aren't going to do that every week. Although I still hope he's going to go on and be a good Celtic player. But the sort of collective, yeah, this is all good. It's like, it's only as good as until we go Ibrox and lose, stupidly. And then, you know, the mask falls apart and we remember, all right, you know, that's, it's not that good. You know, we're not brilliant. We're not competent. We're not well led right now. And it is what it is. We're in a bad place, but there's still a Scottish Cup to win. And there's still, you know.
We're only 5 points off third at the moment. We played the same number of games as Aberdeen. We're only 5 points ahead of them.
One of the things, as a neutral, I genuinely feel sorry for Derek McInnes in that a very competent, a bit of a twat, obviously, but a competent manager came along, did a good job at the time, Scotland's second biggest club. And, you know, he was robbed of some glory by being in the same place as Brendan Rodgers at that time. You know, I think McInnes has done a good job at Aberdeen. So, yeah, we shouldn't take it for granted that we're going to come second, perhaps. Maybe that would be the counter-argument to my, you know, flush the toilet, start from scratch strategy now. Uh-huh. That we need to cling on to this second Champions League place. But I think you could probably achieve both if we go about it properly.
I just can't see, if there's any termination point in Duffy's contract, the only reason you wouldn't is just now because Julian's out for the rest of the season and Beaton suspended for the next game. But you would surely just say that he was brought in to do a job. We actually, Ayer and Julian had a good record last season defensively. Yes. The issue was they got roughed up a couple of times against Livingston. So we decided to sign Duffy. The whole tone of everything was, we're signing Duffy so that we never get roughed up by a Livingston again. But Livingston sold the guy who was roughing us up. So we signed a centre-half to deal with one guy, and that one guy left the league. Because there was no other player, no other team that were doing that. They were rag-rolling them. So we should have signed a different style of centre-half, but then that's, you know, my irritation with us shopping in England all the time. Of sort of going down the other teams in the SPL. Let's buy an average, your description of the Preston guy. Let's sign a mid-20s average player who's kicking around the lower leagues of English football because he'll give us a solid 6 out of 10. Bollocks to that. We are better than that.
We have been.
So, you're... what type... I do hate it when people say, so who would you have as manager? I'm not the chief executive of Celtic. I don't watch the rest of European football. I don't have most of the agents of European football on my contact list. I couldn't pick up the phone to every other club chairman in Europe. I couldn't pick up the phone to people and ask their opinion, so that's irrelevant. What type of person would you want as the next Celtic? That for me is more important, not who, what type of manager would you go for?
You mean like a decision to be made tomorrow, planning for next summer, or just a guy to take us home?
Just in general, so that, you know, for me, I would set out and say, this is the type of guy I want. And if I can't get him, and if I then narrow it down to, this is what I would do. Go for the criteria of what I want. narrow it down to a list of candidates of four or five. And if the ideal candidate's available now, if you pay a decent amount of money, I'd get him in now so you can plan.
Yeah.
If he's not available now, I'd wait. Because next season now matters more than this one. What type of manager do you want?
I guess just try to add up the club's history, a guy who's allegedly good at his job and a sort of progressive coach. Sean Maloney would be the jump out. You know, if you could get Sean Maloney to say cheerio to De Bruyne and Hazard and come and be the next great Celtic manager, that would be the obvious choice. I can't imagine it'd be too hard to get a guy away from an assistant coach job, unless he thinks he's going to win the Euros next summer with Belgium and he wants to be part of that. I listened to the 20-minute Tim's interview with him just last week, and it was really interesting. No major surprises. You know, he seems like a guy that knows his stuff. But the equivalent of that, if there's an Italian Sean Maloney, a German Sean Maloney, a French Sean Maloney, or the Spanish Sean Maloney, a young, upcoming guy with some good ideas that is getting endorsed by other good coaches, he'd be the obvious choice, whoever he is. I don't know what Sean Maloney is in Spanish.
I don't know.
I'm trying to throw a joke together here, but I can't even think of it. But you get my point. You know, a guy who has proven to some extent that he has, you know, ideas going forward. In the same way, you know, when Dortmund give Tuchel the job and Tuchel then gets the Paris job, he must have done something, you know, before Dortmund to get that heat on his reputation, you know. Obviously, Maloney's the only one that comes to mind because he is Celtic related. But there must this is not a unique character. There's other people that are intelligent that like football and are in football. So that would be the template. Someone that wants to make Celtic worth watching and wants to give young players a chance to get better. And in times when money is an issue, frugal, and who works well with what he has. Nothing annoys me more than a checkbook manager. Quite look forward to seeing Sam Allardyce get his comeuppance in the next 6 months, to be honest.
Do you know, I have to say I'm a bit betwixt and between Sam Allardyce. Most of it is that I don't, but there is a small part. I always remember watching a Football Focus. Obviously, this is about 15, 20 years ago when he was at Bolton.
Yeah.
And he was really into the players doing yoga.
Right.
And the goalkeepers going for dancing and ballet lessons to be good with their feet, you know, to be on their toes and stuff that, for, you know, was not your stereotypical clogger centre half.
Yeah.
Probably belied his reputation for stuff. I think it was because at the time, Bolton seemed to were signing the odd older player who was getting a new lease of life under Sam Allardyce. And it was his whole thing was, because that guy shouldn't be, that guy knows his body and he's mature enough, he's experienced enough, he knows his body, he knows training, he doesn't need to train every week. He does do, we get him doing yoga just to keep himself supple and, you know, that type of thing. I think the rest of his personality and style probably is not for me, but that part of it showed me that there was slightly more to him than people think. But
that tactic is something that is probably the only time I'm always up for us, you know, if it takes spending a bit of money on David Turnbull, we do that. That's the future. But the alternative is the Mravchik signing. If you're going to sign a 33-year-old, make sure it's a 33-year-old that was one of the best players in Europe, you know, when he was in his pomp. And I'm surprised we've never really gone down that. But the closest we've got was Keane and Bellamy on loan. They were good players. They were probably a bit younger, to be honest. I meant Robbie Keane, not Roy. Although, obviously, we signed both because they're Irish, and that's what we do. So if we're going to sign And yeah, so to go to Allardyce, you know, I had a mate who was a Bolton fan, and it's like nobody in Britain knows how good Youri Djorkaeff was, other than Bolton fans that saw him every week. Youri Djorkaeff was a genius, a World Cup winning genius, you know, one of the best players in the world in his pomp. And yeah, he went to Bolton and kept them up and was the best player in the Premier League for a couple of years. So that would be one place you'd look to maybe make a spark, you know, to invest. You wouldn't spend the equivalent money on guys that were okay but played at high level and are now past it. You know, there'd need to be the suspicion that this guy might be brilliant. I don't know, like Juan Mata. I obviously be well out of our money range, but if you could pick up a Juan Mata, 32-33, he'd be brilliant at Celtic, you know?
I think Peter Lawwell looks at the Freddie Ljungberg signing and things like that.
See, I'd call into question whether or not Freddie Ljungberg was ever that good.
Well, that would be my point, and it's a bit like the we don't sign South Americans because of Rafael Schaik. You know, one guy doesn't set the tone for everything.
I think Ljungberg was a good player in that he made good runs off of Bergkamp and Henri, but he was never the best player in the team that he was in. He also played off Henrik Larsson. He was quite good, you know, for a national team. So you'd try and find the one that was the real linchpin in the great side, who's maybe past their, you know, best. You wouldn't pick the one just because he played in the great Arsenal team.
Yeah, which is why you then need, for me, what do you call him, director of football or sporting director? But you have a head of recruitment and someone who's looking at the long-term strategy, and he's not the chief executive. Anyway, we've lost the league. Chelsea will win the cup.
It's a nice idea, isn't it, that Brown comes on and lifts another Scottish Cup, his second in, what, 6 months?
I mean, I would say there's probably a chance that by May you might have some people in stadium, so it might be something, at least the fans could get in and see that.
It annoys me that, you know, we have, I don't think some certain Rangers players deserve to win many trophies, but we are going to bookend our period of dominance with Alan McGregor winning titles, which is just a disaster. It's something that shouldn't have been allowed to happen, but it's going to happen. So, Celavi, I'm sure this will get clipped and stuck in a TikTok, and I'll go viral very briefly. So that's a disaster. But it would be a fitting way to end this. Maybe we won't get as lucky, and maybe, you know, the cup 2 weeks ago was that moment. It'd be nice to think that maybe we'll get another one. We'll end the season on a high. But, you know, hard to imagine at this point.
Yeah, I'm trying to finish the podcast in a positive.
Oh, I'll just say yes. Yes, we're definitely going to win the Scottish Cup. Mikey Johnson, Griffiths, Turnbull, Soro, they're going to blast us to another Scottish Cup. No doubt about it.
Our next game's at home to Hibs. 11th of January. We're away to Dubai. We're flying out now, I think.
The clock's now ticking for me as a contributor to this podcast, because my Celtic TV runs out in either a week or 2 weeks. And as long as Neil Lennon's still taking a wage from Celtic Park, I am not renewing that. So I might be taking a break to, I don't know, write my novel or something. I might have like a game or two left in that subscription, but it won't be going beyond that.
Well, surely one positive take out of this season is in seeing Duffy and Neil Lennon. I don't think if you've got a criteria for the next manager, if anybody puts Irish or Celtic man on it, then they get sacked out of the boardroom, and you bring somebody else in who knows what they're doing, and you recruit football people. Anyway. Right. With that, are you stuck? Are you stuck in Central Europe? You can't get home?
Oh, yeah. It's Slovakia's gone in a 40-day, like, super lockdown. So I can't even. I tried to cross the border to Austria the other day to buy some Maltesers to re up my supply. I got. If you're ever going to get shouted at by a border guard, you want it to be in a German accent. It just adds that level of fear. So yeah, I'm stuck in Slovakia in whatever their equivalent of Maltesers is for the next month and a half.
All right, well, enjoy your Slovakian Maltesers, and I'll say thanks very much.
Right, hail, hail.
I can tell by your eyes that you've probably been crying forever.
Well, if you enjoy it as the appropriate word, I hope you enjoyed that. Next game's not for 11 days, so there's plenty of other things in life we can enjoy and take advantage of, even with the current restrictions. Just think about how marvellous things are going to be next season. Anyway, enough of me. That was me, Harry Brady, with him, Anthony Murray. I got a new stand for my mic for Christmas, so there'll be more podcasts. Hopefully work won't be quite so busy as it's been since 2020, probably the busiest year ever for lots of people. I know that, working 12-hour days and things. Anyway, enough of me. Take care. God bless. Good night.